Okay! Tokyo!
South America!
Australia!
France!
Germany!
UK!
America!
Here we go! Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And looky, here we are. It is the 20th day of November 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to find the pop-up players. Of course, if you're listening on some sort of iDevice, an Android that, a smart other thing, then you might want to use the apps from Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Utunes, which at $4.99 works just dandy in the App Store. However, it's $4.99, but you don't get bombarded with a bunch of ads, I don't think. Okay? HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is also where you go to find your way to the chat room. Yes, the Horn chat room. An experience unlike any other. A full multimedia extravaganza in which you yourself can easily participate. We've got a nice little group already up and running in the chat room this evening. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Benny. Good evening, Jan and Jerry. Good evening, Lance. Had a great little conversation with Lance last night on the air. Good evening, Michael. And, of course, good evening, Texas T. And the whole shebang being moderated capably and ably by longtime veteran indefatigable chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky. By the way, we keep this entire enterprise running on your kind contributions, and thanks very much to Paul, who got us started this evening with a note. Paul says, love the filibobster. Thanks for your effort. Well, thank you for being there and helping the entire community keep this whole thing going, Paul. Without you and others, it wouldn't be here. So we'll try to raise, $150 this evening. And toward that end, I might note that we have had a note from, see what I did there? I might note that we have had a missive from Robert in Australia. He says, it's November 21st here, but November 20th where you are. Indeed it is. So let me pay for tonight's show. Have a show on me, says Robert. Of course, it would be nice if 150 people with a dollar each would contribute so the Horn could build a cash reserve. Get a few days ahead. Turn that molehill into a mountain. It would be nice indeed. Thank you, Robert. So the challenge is there. Tonight is brought to you by Robert in Australia via the Up Over Down Under Challenge. By the way, Robert mentioned the punchline of a little joke last night, and we get the whole joke this evening. P.S. The joke, people from Queensland are referred to as banana benders, the joke being that bananas grow straight, but that Queenslanders spend their time bending them. Oh, I suspect it is kind of an inside joke, but I think I get the gist of it. I think I do. I think. So thank you very kindly, Robert, and thank you, Paul, for getting... And Paul didn't even know it was time for the 20th of the month Up Over Down Under Challenge for helping getting us started along those lines. That means that we're $130 away from everybody matching up with... matching up with what Robert has already done. Oh, let's see. It is, of course, Thorn in the Side Thursday. Yeah, we save Thursdays for moments of right-wingery that just don't make us kick furniture and such as that. No, really, we've got a bunch of really top-notch contenders. Or, you know, bottom of the barrel, depending on how one looks at it. I tend to look at it as the barrel being scraped. And it is a low barrel indeed. Now, let's see. I need to check in here on one matter. Because the interweb tubes have been fairly vibrating, almost singing, in fact, all day long over the right wing's hooting about President Obama's speech coming this evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Excuse me. We also have another story of another installment payment on America's butcher's bill in our deal with the devil, that in which we trade out human lives and human safety, so that the gun goobers, so that the gun goobers won't scream and cry and shoot more of us. This particular installment payment was made at Florida State University. Early in the wee hours of the morning, three people were shot. When a person with a freedom protector,
Wolverines!
Yeah, a person with a freedom protector invaded the library at Florida State University. Sorry, brief conversation with the boy there. But yes, Florida State University's main library, if I understand correctly, was invaded by a Second Amendment remedy toter. The police showed up. And instead of simply gunning down the freedom protector, they asked him to drop his weapon. If only police had been as solicitous of, say, you know, Michael Brown. No, they asked him to drop his weapon, and he declined. And he actually shot at one of the officers, and then they. Tallahassee police spokesman David Northway said, you know, they returned fire and blew him away. The shooter was, in fact, and this is one of those little combinations. The shooter was Myron May. Myron May graduated from Florida State University in 2005 and then graduated from the law school at Texas Tech University. Who knew they had one? In 2009, and he had practiced law in both Texas and New Mexico and had recently moved back to the Tallahassee area. apparently Myron May was worried about targeting. And law enforcement authorities are saying that he left a journal in which he stated he was afraid of being targeted. It's really difficult to tell what he meant by that. He wanted to bring attention to the issue of targeting by targeting other individuals, sort of randomly. So, how many of these have there been since little first graders were chopped into AK-47 chutney or AR-15 chutney at Sandy Hook Elementary School? How many? Now, bearing in mind, of course, that there are a bunch of losers out there who swear up and down Sandy Hook never happened. So, you know, we're not going to spend a lot of time on the shooting at Florida State this evening because there's really not a hell of a lot of point to it. Why? Because nothing's going to happen. We just happen to have had another shooting rampage on another campus at another school in the United States of America, and tomorrow or the next day or the next day or next week or next month, probably not much more than next month, we'll have another one. Because the NRA, which controls a significant plurality of members of the Congress of the United States, has told them it is better off that we have children and young adults being blown away than to actually sit down and have a national discussion about why it is that we feel the need to have so many guns, so many firearms. And why it is that we feel so unsafe, so incredibly unsafe. Ugh. Meanwhile, yes, at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, President Obama will broadcast remarks regarding his action on immigration. He is taking action on immigration because the Congress of the United States insists upon abdicating its own duties to deal with the issue. Because much of the Congress is controlled by a plurality of people who have a lot of guns, and the people in Congress are afraid that the people with the guns, otherwise known as the Tea Party, the Teabaggers, the Birthers, the Deathers, the Tenthers, the Booger Eaters, the Birchers, the Libertarians, and the Republicans generally will turn on them and either not show up at the polls to keep them in office or maybe start picking a few, you know, just go Congress plinking. Don't go looking for President Obama's speech on any of the so-called old-line traditional broadcast networks, however. ABC has taken a pass on broadcasting the speech. NBC said, no thank you. CBS said, nah, no, we'd rather, we've got stuff that makes ratings. And Fox said, well, this isn't a communist socialist Kenyan network. Why would we run a speech by a communist socialist Kenyan Muslim? So you'll have to go to some cable network or watch it online, perhaps C-SPAN? C-SPAN isn't running Dancing with the Stars this evening or anything, are they? So maybe we can get it at C-SPAN. I think, depending on how the conversation is going, we might check in on the speech at about 8 p.m. Eastern Time. It might be interesting to hear. It might be interesting to hear, in fact, because it might be interesting to hear what the president actually says as compared to what the birthers, deathers, tenthers, baggers, deathers, and booger eaters as well as the Birchers and the Libertarians and the Republicans, hear through their tinfoil helmets him say in translation from the original Kenyan Muslim speak. Apparently, if we are to believe advanced stories, the centerpiece of the speech will be regarding undocumented parents of children who were born in the United States, who will be protected against deportation and therefore protected against being separated from their American citizen children, which seems kind of humane, I know. This, of course, will drive the right wing crazy, because humane is something the right wing never want to be. Well, I mean, they'll be humane to white people, but, you know. It will be a mild and a tepid response, because the president, not sure, simply doesn't do really bold, out there things. I'm not necessarily criticizing President Obama. I'm simply saying that he doesn't do radical, very progressive stuff. If he wanted progressive things, we would have universal single payer health care, perhaps, instead of this commercialized hybrid thing that the right wing insists upon calling Obamacare, and swears is going to end up with us all wearing the mark of the beast because we all bought Orange Julius's at Dairy Queen or something, and then we're all going to go to hell after we've been communists. So that's coming up. In the meantime, though, since it is, in fact, Titanic Tuesday, or not Titanic Tuesday, wow, where did that come from? Since it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, yeah, okay, they both start with T. Since it is, in fact, Thorn in the Side Thursday, I thought we might examine, because it will be so much fun, I thought we might examine the advance responses of those self-same birthers, deathers, tenthers, baggers, and booger eaters to what the aliens from Norblap 12 have told them through their tinfoil hats is going to be said this evening. Let us start with Prune Lady, also known as Phyllis Schlafly. And she's a real Lulu. Phyllis Schlafly is, and has been for a very long time, off living in her own sort of, it's not even a parallel universe, it's sort of a tangential universe, one that touches our reality at one part and just one tiny point and then goes off in its own direction. She was interviewed by Paul Bremer. That Paul Bremer? Who knows? Wingnut Daily has lots and lots of money. Maybe they were able to hire the guy who was in charge of the looting of the American treasury and shipping it to Baghdad. L. Paul Bremer? L. Paul Bremer. I don't know if it's the same guy. Don't much care. But she gave an interview to Wingnut Daily in which she said the following, and I'm not kidding. President Obama's, this is the way Paul Bremer writes it up. President Obama's looming executive action on immigration reform represents a... no, really. Oh, I was about to screw up big time. Get the duct tape. Get the hockey puck. Because they are... The wingnuts are in what can only be called high dudgeon. And if what I'm reading here is to be believed, Phyllis Schlafly may simply vibrate into a million tiny pieces even before the speech is over. President Obama's looming executive action, yes, it's looming, you know, again, looms. I mean, you know, anytime you hear looming, you have to think, whoa, and, you know, creaky door hinges and, you know, monsters under the bed and stuff like that. President Obama's looming executive action on immigration reform represents a Fort Sumter-like moment. You got that? A Fort Sumter-like moment. Thank you very kindly to the folks at rightwingwatch.org for collating this stuff. Mercifully, there's no audio to go with it. I don't know if I could take it if there was. President Obama's looming executive action on immigration reform represents a Fort Sumter-type moment, according to conservative icon Phyllis Schlafly. I have a feeling we're going to have to engage in some thorn-in-the-side Thursday analysis of this. Schlafly, at first, considered comparing the Obama amnesty to the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, but decided that Obama's plan is much more subtle. You have to pronounce the B when you're talking about right-wingers talking about subtlety. You know, excuse me, but wasn't the attack on Pearl Harbor pretty subtle? I mean, it was a sneak attack, right? We didn't know it was coming. We knew they were up to something, but we didn't know what the something was. And so it was that the world awakened on the morning of Sunday, December 7th, 1941. Well, it was the afternoon of December 7th, 1941, on the east coast of the United States, when word began filtering through, the evening even, when word came down that the Japanese had up and bombed the living daylights out of our fleet at Pearl Harbor and just about gotten the entire Pacific Fleet except for three aircraft carriers and some ships that were escorting them, which turned out to be rather important. But it was a sneak attack. It was subtle. However, Phyllis Schlafly and the spirochetes that apparently, not parakeets, spirochetes, that apparently inhabit her brain, Phyllis Schlafly said, "With Pearl Harbor, the American people knew what was happening." Well, that almost sounds like Granny Kyler, doesn't it? No, Phil, the American people did not know what was happening with Pearl Harbor. That's why it was a sneak attack. But Fort Sumter, where the opening shots of the Civil War were fired, represented the beginning of a ruinous conflict, and Schlafly, like fellow conservative luminary Richard Viguerie, speculates that an executive amnesty might touch off a sort of modern-day conflagration. Kind of interesting, though, isn't it, that the woman wants to cite Fort Sumter, and yet it was un-American treason artists who started the aforementioned conflagration. And you know what? There was no subtlety. There was no subtlety to Fort Sumter. It was far less subtle than, say, Pearl Harbor, because the folks out in the Union garrison in Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor could pretty much see all the traitors gathering up on the waterside. You know, the lovely ladies, probably the great grandfather of Lindsey Graham, coming down in their little old carriages, bringing their human bondage with them, and watching General Pierre Gustave Toutant Beauregard say, "Load up the cannons, boys. It's time to show them Yankees a lesson. We gonna commit treason today." So there was very little that was subtle at all about Fort Sumter, and yet this lady for whom the Aricept is apparently not working at all thinks that somehow or another Fort Sumter is a better comparison than Pearl Harbor when discussing the President Obama's executive action regarding immigration, which, by the way, has been engaged in by every other Republican president since Richard Nixon. But, you know, that one in our White House doesn't get to do things other white presidents got to do because, well, you know, Kenyan Muslim socialism, right? Meanwhile, the paranoid little spirochetes, and perhaps parakeets, who can tell, inside Phyllis Schlafly's brain, have decided that the part of the reason for doing this is we're going to give amnesty to
the aliens, and then we're going to give them Obamacare. I don't think he will deny them Obamacare.
At which point, apparently, Paul Bremer asked Phyllis Schlafly, or the things living in her brain, or what used to be her brain, if there ever was one, so, is the president lying?
I think he lies about everything. Where's my milk of magnesia? I like a little milk of magnesia cocktail of an evening. A little milk of magnesia, a little gin, a little ice. Just makes everything go so much more smoothly. How do you not mock that? How do you not make sport of that? How do you not make light of it? How do you not make fun of it? How do you not just treat it as the absolute insanity that it is? This is not a serious human being. This is not someone who knows a diddly damn about foreign policy, domestic policy, immigration policy, or anything other than perhaps her annuity policy? I think he lies about everything, and he's much more subtle than Pearl Harbor.
And this is the stuff in front of the speech, not afterwards. My email box got polluted all day long with pitches for me to invite various and sundry wingnuts onto the program so that they can tell me what it means. What it means that the President of the United States is going to say something about
immigration.
Oh, for pity's sakes. I mean, there's... there's all kinds of potential here. Oh, God. Now, bear in mind, the speech has not even yet been given. Of all the people who might have an advance copy of the speech, I think it's a safe bet that the Tea Party Patriots... Hey, Rocky, watch me pull a Tea Party out of my hat. The Tea Party Patriots don't have a copy. Their motto, pursue your American dream. Jenny Beth Martin is issuing a statement on President Obama's executive amnesty. Old Ryan Hughes over at Shirley and Bannister Public Affairs wanted to make sure I knew. I don't even know who the hell is Jenny Beth Martin to a tree.
This is an unprecedented assault on the Constitution, the separation of powers, and the rule of law in the United States. President Obama today told millions of people, if you broke our laws to enter this country, we will not prosecute you. We will not deport you. Despite the president's assurance that he is not an emperor, that's exactly what he's acting like. He's a former law professor. He knows the Constitution vests Congress, not the executive branch, with authority over immigration and naturalization. He just doesn't care. This is a thumb in the eye to the American people. This is not a partisan issue. Liberal law professor Jonathan Turley said what the president is suggesting is tearing at the very fabric of our Constitution. You know, because our Constitution is made of the same fabric that Bear Bryant used to have his Alabama Crimson Tide wear in the form of tearaway jerseys. You know, dude would be trucking around the right side, trying to decide whether to pitch or whether to keep, and maybe at the last minute he decides to keep, and he turns the corner and he heads up, and let's say some old boy from Auburn just grabs a big old handful of jersey, and he's just standing there with a whole bunch of jersey because it's very thin fabric, and it tore the fabric of the jersey, and away fled Kenny Stabler with nothing on but his shoulder pads and his under T-shirt. It's tearing this here, this immigration. It is tearing at the very fabric of our Constitution, even though we've never even seen or heard the speech. We don't have to, because he's a Kenyan Muslim socialist, and we know what Kenyan Muslim socialists is all the time saying. It's time for Congress, with its power of the purse, to defund executive amnesty. Congressman Matt Salmon of Arizona stand has led this effort in the House of Representatives, and we're asking everyone to contact their members of Congress and ask them to support his efforts. They can go to aintgivingtheirstinkingurl.com to send a direct message. President Obama learned nothing from the wave election. You know, the wave election that was comprised of, what, about 21% of the eligible voters in the United States? Jesus Christ, with waves like that. I mean, honest to God, I don't think Archie the cockroach from Archie and Mehibel, was he a cockroach? Or was it, Archie was a cockroach. He jumped on the keys by night to write his poems. I don't think Archie the cockroach from Archie and Mehibel could surf on a wave that tiny. He learned nothing from the wave election that repudiated him, his policies, and his party. Actually, I think he's spoken up in favor of a raise in the minimum wage, and minimum wage rises passed just about everywhere that they were on the ballot. I don't know if Jenny Beth Martin actually knows the difference between a wave and a trough. Oh, sure, Jenny Beth Martin knows the difference between a wave and a trough because she's got her front trotters in one. A trough, that is, not a wave. And she's just trying to get her back trotters in there with it. Jenny Beth Martin. Let's let Jenny Beth finish. This is a constitutional republic, Jenny Beth Dunn said, not a banana republic. It's time we all started acting like it. Oh, nice banana reference, Jenny Beth. Would we really have expected any different? So we got the Tea Party Patriots, and we got Phyllis Schlafly and them little things squirreling around through. Kipton, it was terrible. They put things in our ears, squirreling around through her little noggin, and eating up her lizard brain and turning it all into sort of a gray sloppy goo that sloshes around in between her ancient ears. But that ain't all. Oh, no, hell no. Not just Jenny Beth Martin, not just Phyllis Schlafly. But how's about Laura Ingraham? Laura Ingraham is one of the smart ones. That's why they done give her a radio show and let her talk on the Fox TV once in a while now over there at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. I mean, she's got the big lizard brain.
and consequently, on her little old radio show today, she done had a sure enough hissy. She did. Oh, my mercy sakes alive. I mean, they probably had to go borrow some smelling salts and a fainting couch from Lindsey Graham. Because she's figured out how to nip this in the bud, you know, Barney Fife style. Nip it! Nip it! Yeah. I trust you have not, in a moment of foolhardy optimism, put away the hockey pucks and the duct tapes, have you? You'd never do anything like that, right? Yeah, they give Laura Ingraham a radio show every day where she gets to just, she does for the public discourse what a toilet does when you pull the handle. It just flushes more filth into the system. Let's check in with Miss Laura real quick and find out her solution to this here constitutional crisis in this here constitutional republic. What ain't a banana republic? Right? Yeah, let's do.
Is Reince, given what we've seen with the abuse of this, we have the anchor baby issue, and people come in here, Long Beach, California, they have birth motels, the local NBC did a massive investigation, expose of this. We have this in Arizona and Texas. Isn't it time for the Republicans to consider finally dealing with this issue of birthright citizenship? If both parents aren't American citizens, you are not entitled to automatic citizenship in this country?
I have no idea who the guest is. Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do. This was yesterday. This was yesterday on the program, and she is talking to Reince Priebus. You know, Reince Priebus of the Royal Imodium Mounted Dragoons and his trusty possum Splat. You know, head of the Repig-Licking Party. Yeah, we want to get rid of, what did she call it, this birthright citizenship nonsense. Did she call it nonsense? Yes, nonsense. The idea of becoming an American citizenship is something you can earn. I mean, and the way you earn American citizenship is by joining the Tea Party, or the John Birch Society, or maybe the Ku Klux Klan, because we know they're all real Americans.
Perhaps, Laura. I don't know. I mean,
Oh, Jesus, he sounds a little frustrated. Oh, I don't know.
I have been very clear on where I'm at on this subject. I have been very much in line with the platform of our party. I think that clearly this is a big issue. I don't think that we can do anything without fulfilling the promise of the 2006 Congress of building the border fence. I don't believe that we should be spending money on cities that are not enforcing the laws through the federal government.
Bingo. We agree with you.
I know, and there's just so many.
We? What is she, the freaking Queen of England?
Things that I've been clear on, and but again, I go back to the original point, and I'm not trying to be difficult. I just don't believe a thing that the president says on this subject until I see it. And when I see it,
we've seen a lot.
I think they're scrambling.
Right.
They're scrambling right now. I guarantee you, they do not have a final product.
A final product? Is that only because somebody told him he couldn't say final solution? I can't, good God. Of course, you know, you understand there's some right-wing dog whistling going on in Laura Ingraham's statement there. If both parents aren't American citizens, you're not entitled to automatic citizenship in this country. Who would that strip of his citizenship? Come on, you know, this is easy. That's right. That one, that Kenyan Muslim usurper in our White House. couldn't be an American no more, because he ain't never been an American, never before, no how, and that's why he's turning this year into a banana dictatorship. Now, I'm not going to crawl up on the cross because everybody needs the wood, but this is the kind of, I read this stuff all day long. And for anybody who ever asked the question, why do you do all those funny voices, Bob, or those unfunny voices? It's because they start rattling around in my head at about 6 o'clock in the morning, and they go without freaking let up. I mean, Laura Ingraham has been on what we call around here a roll. I mean, she hates her. She hates her some illegal aliens babies. She hates her some birth. I mean, that was this nasty, nasty human being actually used the phrase anchor babies. I was thinking about all this earlier today, and it occurred to me, as progressive people, we don't pick out an individual singular group and decide that they are the problem, that if we can just deal with them, everything will be all right in America. Do we? We don't say if we can just eliminate a certain group of human beings, then it'll be we'll be all shiny on the city and on the hill again. But that's the heart and the soul of Republican policy. Finding different people to hate. This is an entire political movement that is fueled by, that feeds on, that consumes the basest human emotion available to any member of the species. Hate. Anchor, baby. I mean, take a moment, imagine yourself looking down into a crib, or a cradle, or a bassinet, or maybe just a pulled-out drawer in a dresser with some blankets stuffed in it, because that's all the place there is for the baby, or how about maybe a stable with a manger full of straw? And a blanket laid over top the straw, and looking down at the baby and deciding that that baby is an anchor baby. Looking down at a precious little infant. And by the way, this is the crowd that's supposed to be pro-life. They love them some little fetuses. They're pro-life. They're part of what Dim Leader once called the culture of life. And they talk about infants born in the United States who, having been born in the United States pursuant to the actions of the 14th Amendment and operation thereof, are American citizens. And they hate them. They despise them. They loathe them. You know, I personally believe, and I understand how dangerous that word is. It's the most dangerous word in the English language, the word believe. But I personally believe that when a right-winger uses the phrase anchor baby, what they mean is they would like to tie an anchor to the baby and throw it into the sea. Imagine for just one moment looking at a little baby, a newborn, in its crib, however it is swaddled, and thinking, I hate that baby. That baby is taking away from my white privilege. That baby is going to change America away from the white, very nice place that it used to be, and we're just going to be another country full of mud people. You see, that's the way right-wingers talk. When they get going real good about immigration, they go absolutely nuts. Meanwhile, and we can call attention to this fact, meanwhile, with the exception of maybe a million people in this country, there's nobody here in whose veins does not run the blood of an immigrant. How about the members of the Mayflower Society? The people who are directly related to the people who came here on the Mayflower? And they're out there. Lots of them, apparently. Is it the Mayflower Society? Is that what it's called? They think they're really special because they're the original Americans. Only they're not. They're descended from a bunch of religious wacko loons, malcontents who were so insufferable that they were not they couldn't even be tolerated in Great Britain or the Netherlands. And the Netherlands kind of had a history of tolerance, but not them. Oh, really? You want to get on a boat and go somewhere? Fine by us. They were the first illegal immigrants, but what percentage do you guess of members of the Mayflower Society have the gall to stand up and talk about illegal immigration? Because you know they do. When in fact they came here and began from the moment their feet touched soil stealing from other people who were already here. So anyway, let's check in on another clip from Miss Laura. Oh, wait a minute! How did I do that? Here we go.
Kevin, Phoenix, Arizona, line one. As some on the border are now predicting a new wave of illegals coming across in anticipation of this executive amnesty, creating potentially another humanitarian disaster, economic problems for localities and cities, towns that have had to absorb these new illegal immigrants, and all sorts of news coming out of Texas where the schools are having a difficult time processing all of this and managing it. One school system, I believe in Houston, 3,000 illegal immigrant kids. I don't know how is the school system you deal with this. I really don't. That's just one piece of the puzzle. Kevin.
10,000 kids crossed the border in 1 month. I just don't understand how that is a secure border. That's what they insisted. They said the border is secure. Children are walking across. I really don't understand it.
Well, I don't know how many children are walking across. I know there are a lot of teenagers who are coming across. The median age in the last big wave was 15 years of age. I mean, we were getting the impression that three-year-olds were just crossing the border by themselves in diapers. That just wasn't happening. You had entire family units crossing the border. Mothers, and a lot of mothers who are pregnant, obviously knowing that if they have a baby here, they can stay here. The baby has American citizenship. And I'm going to say this until my last breath. When are we going to get rid of this birthright citizenship nonsense? Republicans, no matter what you do on the issue of immigration, that should be one of your number one priorities, locking the border down and ridding us of this birthright citizenship.
Thanks, of course, to the fine folks over at Media Matters for pulling that clip. They take one for the team every time they do so. You would think that the cognitive dissonance would be sufficient to make her tiny empty head explode when she talks about how much she hates pregnant mothers. But somehow or another, she doesn't. I she's, and of course, the answer is, of course, racism. Because she is free to hate anybody who is the wrong skin tone that she deems worthy of hate, Laura Ingraham. I couldn't stand it, could you? I couldn't stand living my life in a state of perpetual hatred toward other people whom I neither knew nor knew about. But of course, that's not all. Not by a long shot. No, no. Because while Laura Ingraham knows that the way to fix this is to take away citizenship from born Americans and then set up, I don't know, some sort of citizenship panel of good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christian, evangelical citizenship determiners. Well, then there's, and you know, she's been making more and more appearances on this program over the past few months. There's Andrea Canteros. And she is, of course, a real live, honest to God, no kidding, Lulu. I mean, chase her down with a net type. She's figured out exactly what the strategy is that the Kenyan Muslim usurper is using to destroy Merca. He's using his Kenyan Muslim usurper powers, and right, yeah, because he's just that. Well, he's that sneaky. I've given you absolutely no reason whatsoever to put away either the hockey puck or the duct tape. I suspect you're going to be needing it for a while. Oh, yeah. Oh, dear God. Where do they find these freaks? Where do they come from? Let's just go to the audio. And, well, we'll go to the audio first.
So I want to focus in on what he just said about striking the right tone. Andrea, what does that mean? What is the right tone?
Well, I think we'll have to wait and see what he says this evening. But I think during
the... No, in terms of Republicans taking the right...
Well, Republicans have to be very careful because, as the judge pointed out, Obama is banking on Republicans overreaching. He is double-daring them into impeaching him. And I think this is all about politics.
He's what? Oh. Okay.
Oh, that's dumb. That's got nowhere to stick.
You're full of it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
well, I double dog dare you.
Now, if you're serious, a double dog dare. What else was left but a triple dare you? And finally, the coup de grace of all dares, the sinister triple dog dare.
I triple dog dare you.
Schwartz created a slight breach of etiquette by skipping the triple dare and going right for the throat.
All right.
Yep. That's the state of modern broadcasting over at Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. They're using schoolyard taunts now. You heard it. You heard it.
I think during
the... No, in terms of Republicans taking the right...
Well, Republicans have to be very careful because, as the judge pointed out, Obama is banking on Republicans overreaching. He is double daring them into impeaching him.
Yeah, but see, as we all know now, that's just a double dare. He still has double dog dare, and triple dog dare yet to go. So I don't know how seriously to take Andrea Tantaros. Of course, I never do anyway. Generally speaking, I can't take Andrea Tantaros seriously with anything less than an entire fruit jar of homemade liquor.
And I think this is all about politics, because he knows when Republicans come back, they could pass a clean border security bill. He doesn't want to be boxed in, Harris. That's why he's acting on his own to try and get out there first and say, I'm going to do this on my own. By the time the courts get to this, this will already have been long gone, because it's going to take a while. But by that point, Republicans will have overreached. They're going to overplay their hand on it. That's what he's banking on.
You know, Judge Alex, and we've talked about your familia coming here, coming from abroad, and your own immigrant journey as your family pertains to. I'm curious.
Wait, what kind of word salad is that? And your own immigrant journey as your family pertains to? What, in the Iraq and such as? Maybe that's our Thorn in the Side Thursday inquiry for this evening. Where do they find these people? You've got to look hard to find people this dumb. This silly. And yes, Tim from L.A., yes, she really said your familia.
Does this compromise the GOP when trying to seek out members of the Hispanic and the Latino community?
Well, I think yes and no. I mean, obviously, the Hispanic community is not fungible. I mean, every Hispanic is not the same as every other Hispanic.
You have Hispanics, just like the black community.
Wait, what?
Community can't speak
exactly.
For everybody.
And some people try to, or think they all think in a block, but they don't. And so there are some who, like...
No, the only people doing block groupthink are cranky old white wingers.
Me. You know, I am certainly aware that this country is a country of immigrants, but it's also a country of laws. My family came here legally, thank God to the graciousness of the American people opening their arms to us, and you have to follow the law. If you don't follow the law, then where are we? So,
see, this is the tissue paper thin legal fiction upon which they ground themselves. That's why I mentioned the pilgrims earlier. Well, these people came here legally. According to whom? Oh, well, the Congress. The King. The Prince. A Duke. The Jack of Spades. The Ten of Diamonds. Somebody said it was legal to do it. Well, what about the people who are already living here? Well, that, nobody asked. Yeah, we're... They hide behind that, they hide under the skirts of rule of law, and yet at the same time, people who are here according to the actions of the rule of law, you know, children who were born in the United States and are therefore American citizens, nope, not for them, different rule of law, not white enough for the rule of law to apply to them, here's your lovely parting gift.
So you can't justify people just basically ignoring the law and then reward them, because what that does is it encourages more breaking of the law.
Can we have an anthropology moment here? I just want to remind people that we're not talking about Irish immigrants. We're not talking about Russian immigrants, Ukrainian immigrants. We're not talking about immigrants from anywhere else on the planet except south of the Rio Grande. And one of the problems you have with all of these white wingers is trying to explain to them the nature of population dynamics in this hemisphere, which, of course, is comprised only of the United States and maybe Canada on a good day, but trying to explain to these white wingers that people have been migrating up and down these continents, or, you know, it's all one. Why do we consider North America separate from South America, separate from Central America? There's no... You know, that's I remember being in elementary school and being taught that where before the continents of Europe and Asia were deemed to be different continents, that some geographers were now contemplating back then a concept of something called Eurasia. In other words, acknowledging that the idea that Europe as a separate entity was a sort of fiction created by Europeans to delineate the difference between us and them. There are all kinds of these fictions. The Indian subcontinent. Australia is apparently a big-ass island, but not a continent. Antarctica is a continent, but it ain't got any people who can live there without significant scientific help. Technological resources. But somehow or another, we wound up with North, Central, and South America, which strikes me, either in or out of the context of this discussion, as utter, absolute bull. This is one continent. From Point Barrow, Alaska, to Tierra del Fuego. It's one continent, uninterrupted. But somewhere, at some time, somebody decided that there was going to be... And, you know, maybe it's got something to do with the line of demarcation that some pope put... Wasn't that Borgia pope that put together the line of demarcation to keep the Spaniards and the Portuguese from each other's throats? Because it was bad for his business? And thereby decided the fates of millions upon millions of human beings that said Pope had never seen, contemplated, nor much cared about, because after all, you know, being non-Christians, they were simply there to be fleeced by the followers of the Prince of Peace. Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's when it happened. But the reality is that the population of this continent, as we understand it, is one long migration story. From what was at one point in time the Bering Land Bridge, all the way down into what we understand as South America. Although there is some science coming out that suggests that the Polynesian peoples also reached the shores of what we know as South America long before that half-insane Italian conned a couple of madcap Spaniards into ponying up some money for some boats. Said Polynesians may have actually gotten here even before, the Norse people did up in Vinland, from which they hastily retreated, because they didn't have the technological advantages to overcome the peoples that they referred to as Skraelings. And thus said to themselves, screw this, we'll go back to Iceland. I mean, we may be eating nothing but walrus blubber in Iceland, but nobody's making pincushions out of us. You know, for stealing their land. But people have migrated. I mean, I was thinking about this earlier today, and I think I've mentioned the story in the past. It's a story of things actually being done right. They were building, I think, a parking garage in the soon-to-be ghost town of Logan, West Virginia. And they unearthed a humongous burial site, the construction workers did, and properly and according to law, they stopped work. They brought in an archaeological field team who excavated the graves, and then in accordance with federal law, they tested they tested the DNA of the burials, and they found that the nearest living relatives to those people who had been buried 10,000 years ago, maybe, 10,000 years ago, in the hills and hollers of what is now Logan County, West Virginia. They found that their nearest living relatives were the Lakota people of the Great Plains. Now, stop and think for a minute. At that time, everything east of the Mississippi was one great forest. And over the course of generations, the progeny of these people who were buried in what is now Logan County, West Virginia, walked westward until they became the Plains people we know as the Lakota. You know where South Dakota is. You know where West Virginia is. Imagine that walk. And they stopped here and they stopped there along the way, until they decided that they just kind of liked the Great Plains, I guess. We don't know the reason. But that is a massive migration, because this was not an unpopulous continent or hemisphere. The origin myth of my friends, the Ojibwe of northern Wisconsin, talks about them leaving the salt water land and over the course of generations, walking westward until they found the place where food grows on water. And, of course, I've talked in the past about how delightful the wild rice is that grows on the shores of Lake Superior. That, too, is a long walk. Perhaps they fought along the way. Who knows? The origin myth of the Mexica people, for whom Mexico is named, is another story of a long walk. The Mexica people said that they had come from a place called Aztlan, A-Z-T-L-A-N, Aztlan, from which we appropriate the word Aztec, which was not what they called themselves, but being Europeans and feeling like we've got the right to name anybody and anything we want to, we call them. They came from a place called Aztlan and walked for generations until they wound up in the most miserable piece of swampy ground in the middle of a lake in the central valley of Mexico, of what is now Mexico, or what they called Incaminahuac, in the heart of the one world. And, you know, for people who couldn't fly over anything and didn't have any advanced mapping technologies, it's really kind of neat to see how the Valley of Mexico is kind of the heart of the Western Hemisphere. It certainly is home to the largest single population of human beings in this hemisphere. And oddly enough, before 1492, it was then as well. And it was a product of migration, human migration. Then, of course, there is humanity itself, which at one point in time was reduced to a population of roughly, 2,500 individuals in a little corner pocket of Africa? And out of that, those people started walking. And they walked out of Africa. And they walked through Southern Asia. And they got to Southeast Asia. And the oldest human population on Earth is, unless I am misspeaking, and I will be corrected with as sure as God made little green apples and they'll give you the runs if you eat too many of them, the oldest human population on the planet, the Aboriginal peoples of Australia. And they walk north. And after generations and generations of evolutionary process and natural selection, they get paler and paler and paler and paler because they need to absorb sunlight, because they've just about been run out of anywhere that decent civilization was going, or attempts at hunter-gatherer civilization was going on. No, y'all keep moving. You're nasty. Until they get to Scandinavia and start learning some manners. And yet all of this is infuriating to the right wing in this country.
So I think there are Hispanics that say, yes, you know, I want to see my relatives and my family members come over, so I'm in favor of this. And I think there are some that say, you know, I'm all for that, but you've got to do it within the rules. So I don't think it's a block.
You know, Sandra, well, I don't know that we'll hear the president talk about this tonight, but it is one of the things that Americans have expressed in polling and surveys that they care about. And that is the cost and burden on municipalities, on school districts, as these feather into our communities. Talk to me about that.
Well, no, I think that that's a huge...
No, shut the up. The cost and the burden on school districts and municipalities. Well, you know, there is one way to solve that. Congress could increase funding. I know. Totally crazy, right? Congress could. Congress has the power of the purse. They really do. Oh, God. The stupid. It burns us. Luda, who called us a few evenings ago, and I was glad to talk to. Luda, with an email, subject line, Mayflower. Hardworking industrial merkins, land somewhere not your own, start killing the owners, spread your nasty diseases, and then move into their cities and towns, and then have your servants clean up the mess you made. Yep, sounds like hardworking merka to me. I sit and think about sometimes I sit and think about alternate realities. And I think about, you know, the title of that Jared Diamond book, Guns, Germs, and Steel, which is entirely too facile an explanation for too many things. But really, where the Norse people had not been successful because they were not technologically advanced in terms of weaponry, not in terms of civilization, not in terms of knowing how to be decent human beings, but in terms of weaponry. Technologically superior in terms of murderous intent. They were unsuccessful in colonizing in basically what, Newfoundland? Yeah. But by golly, by the end of the 15th century and the beginning of the 16th, that's all changed. It's all changed. And the world sees or actually the world ignores the greatest mass killing perhaps it has ever known. So pardon me while I don't have just a hell of a lot of patience for these privileged bigots. Hold on, these privileged bigots at places like Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. F them. And lo and behold, I have filibobstered my way through the first hour and 14 minutes of the program. And I welcome your commentary, your thoughts, your calls. If you want to call in on the Gizmo line, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676 is the number. If you wish to call in on the other line, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178 is that number. Of course, you can always reach the program Skype to Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact there, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. I remind you, it being as how it is the 20th of the month, it's time for the Up, Over, Down, Under Challenge, courtesy of Robert in Australia, who said he'd love to see 150 members of the Horn family with $1 each match his challenge, but Robert is equally accepting of anybody who simply wants to participate in getting us in matching his challenge. He wants to see us get a little bit out front, and we're working on out front, actually. We're working on being done with fundraising for tomorrow and maybe getting a start on Monday, which would be lovely. So if you want to help, jump on over to the PayPal interface at headonradionetwork.com and or use the U.S. Postal Service, but drop me a note so that I can warn Boss Man Wayne that he doesn't have to wear his spider-proof gloves when he goes to the mailbox, the mailing address being The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y-W-V, 25801, with the gentle reminder that checks and money orders should never be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but should be made to The Horn or Head On Communications or something like that, because I don't ever see the checks and the money orders or anything like that. That's all stuff that Boss Man Wayne takes care of. So, yeah, it's break time. Hopefully folks will jump in and match up with Robert's Up, Over, Down, Under Challenge. And, well, you then, in turn, will participate in the conversation. Yes, indeed, because the gizmo line is rocking and ready, and the other line is open and waiting for your participation. And really, it needs your participation because we try to do something a little different here. We do something we call conversation radio. You don't ever have to worry when you call this program of being told, well, we're going to put you on hold and go and sell some soap now. No, that never happens here. And that's what makes this conversation radio. Also, of course, the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen coming your way in short order. So light them up. Email, tweet, Facebook, whatever you wish. This bumper comes courtesy of Ron and Raleigh. This is The Horn.
Green Cup. Maghreb United.
Au poulet, je suis de la famille Brahmi, Mendy ou Touré. Mes premiers mots c'était Karaï ou I love you. Boum, boum, c'est le bruit d'un mec, beubou, sur un beau, boum, c'est l'aime, la galette. Je suis bilingue, je suis de la France dans quoi, Groupé ou de Marseille. Les dollars, le halis, le bif, l'osé, c'est ce qui me réveille. Désolé d'être moi-même, ma vie, c'est un Tarantino. Un peu de glamour, beaucoup d'action et un peu d'amour. Clandestino, voyou italien selon style, vestiment. T'es âgé, un passeport international, c'est mon stylo. Quand j'étais bambino, la misère j'en ai bouffé des kilos. Le diable crimo, loin d'être un modèle, t'es fidèle à moi-même. Dans ma vie je mets trop de piment. Message pour les tiens, aux miens, aux quelques-uns. Si je fonce tête baissée, c'est que genre sans le besoin. Solide comme un bunker, l'amour c'est un moteur. Sois fier, heureux, si une femme t'appelle mon cœur. J'aime le quartier international. On mélange les plats, le contexte social. Dans une ambiance familiale, y'a des choses qui font mal. Mais on se laisse pas faire, comme Zinedine lors d'une finale. Aïe, aïe.
Désolé d'être jeune. Et d'être moi-même, tout ça un peu différent,
next Thursday, November 20, 2014.
To come down this fast in this short a time, it's nothing like I've seen.
Almost an entire season's snowfall in 24 hours.
Record-breaking extreme winter storm breaks Buffalo.
According to NASA, last month was the warmest October ever recorded across the globe.
It's official. October 2014, the hottest October on record.
As I read the agreement, requires the Chinese to do nothing at all for 16 years.
Wrong, Senator. China will cap coal use by 2020. Plus,
we are going to contribute $3 billion to the Green Climate Fund so we can help developing nations deal with climate change.
Obama doubles down on climate foreign policy.
All of that doubling down and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We can build a Keystone Pipeline, creating thousands of temporary and millions of permanent jobs.
Pardon me, Senator, by millions of jobs, do you mean 50? See how Republicans lie about the Keystone XL
Brad,
Pipeline?
Brad, that's Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu of Louisiana.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it has been so busy of late on the Green News Report, we have fallen behind in welcoming aboard our new affiliate partners. So we're going to start with our first one today, welcoming aboard KNCE 93.5 FM, True Taos Radio in beautiful Taos, New Mexico. Want to welcome Pete Botting and the Trailer Politics Show out there. Delighted to have you guys on board.
Hey, welcome aboard Taos.
And a good reason to go visit Taos again and go skiing. All right, that out of the way, Desi Doyen, bring on today's tsunami of environmental news.
Well, first, a state of emergency remains in effect in New York State after a deadly record-breaking 1-2 punch snowstorm dumped 6 to 8 feet of snow in and around Buffalo in one 24-hour period.
Wait, how much snow?
6 to 8 feet, with more on the way. An entire season's worth of snow in just a few days.
We've seen lake effect snow, but that's rare how it set up. I came across the lake and just stood there and just said, hey, here you go, Western New York, enjoy.
At least 7 deaths blamed on the storm so far. On Democracy Now!, meteorologist Eric Holthaus explains how this extreme precipitation event may be juiced by global warming.
The Great Lakes are, since the 1970s, have decreased their ice cover by about 70%. All that extra open water in the wintertime is giving more chance for things like lake effect snow to form.
Warmer lakes means more moisture available to dump.
And we should note, warmer weather headed towards Buffalo by the weekend. On Monday, they may be pushing 60 degrees. All that snow's got to go somewhere. Hope you got flood insurance, Buffalo.
So again, what we're looking at is a trend toward more extremes. Got it?
Got it.
Good. Now, it may be really cold in the U.S. right now, but last month, October 2014, was officially the hottest October ever recorded globally. That's according to both NOAA and NASA. This newest, hottest October record follows the hottest May, the hottest June, the hottest August, and the hottest September on record, all in 2014. Surprise, 2014 is shaping up to be the hottest year on record.
By way of being fair and balanced, Fox News says none of that is true.
Well, Fox News is lying to you. Turning to the politics of global warming, last week, after President Obama announced his historic climate agreement with China, Republican Senator Mitch McConnell immediately criticized it.
As I read the agreement, it requires the Chinese to do nothing at all for 16 years.
Wrong again, Mitch. The Chinese government on Wednesday announced it will cap its use of coal by 2020. ClimateProgress.org called China's absolute cap on coal by 2020, quote, a stunning reversal of that country's energy policy, because China will now have to stop building coal plants and instead build the equivalent in new clean energy every week for decades to come. Analysts say the move indicates China is positioning itself to lead the world in the renewable technology sector.
And we pointed this out last week, but China will have to build in the next 16 years an entire United States worth of clean, renewable energy.
Yeah, that's in order to meet its pledge to peak its emissions completely by 2030.
And if China can create enough clean energy for an entire United States in 16 years, what is stopping us?
Meanwhile, President Obama doubled down on his climate change foreign policy in a speech at Brisbane University over the weekend. He announced that the U.S. will contribute $3 billion to the United Nations Green Climate Fund, which gives developing countries technology and financing to build renewable energy and to adapt to global warming impacts, essentially helping them leapfrog over the polluting phase of development and not have to deal with the false choice between development and pollution.
We can get this done. And it is necessary for us to get it done.
For much more on all of the stories we covered today and the many we couldn't get to,
yeah,
please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help the Green News Report stay on your public airwaves. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Stay safe, Buffalo.
Riding in the storm out, waiting for the thaw out. Riding in the storm out. Riding in the storm out.
26 minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, and let's go straightway to the Gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Bill, what's up?
Oh, you got me. That was a good piece of work tonight. Because I'd never heard of them digging up so many ancestors of Lakota. I never heard about that before.
It wasn't widely reported.
No, it's not exactly stimulating.
I find it absolutely fascinating, but you know.
Exactly.
I'm nerdy that way.
Well, somebody's dead men telling no tales. Well, that group of people, dead people, sure did, didn't they?
It took a few millennia, but yeah.
Yeah, I read a little bit about the Native Americans. It was not badly written, but it wasn't a piece of a masterpiece. It just talked about the different lifestyles that people had and where they were living and why they lived the way they did. The Eastern bunch, the Iroquois, Algonquin, they were, lived in a certain way, probably because of the weather, like everybody else. And the plains, I'm trying to remember, were there horses in this country before the Spaniards?
Oh, no.
I didn't think so.
Once upon a time, long, 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 long ago, I think before even people arrived here, there was a species of proto-equine animal, but it went extinct long before humans arrived.
Yeah, I thought so. Because I remember the plains folks would have something that dogs could drag, like to carry stuff, lightweight compared with a horse. But I didn't think there's any.
Well, there were no by the time full on civilizations began to arise in the Americas, Bill, the biggest animal out there was the bear, and the biggest by far was the buffalo, I think. And the buffaloes were undomesticable. The only domestication efforts that were particularly successful, in the Valley of Mexico, they domesticated a little dog, which is now extinct. And in the Andean civilizations, they domesticated the llama, the alpaca, and used it for both fur and meat.
Funny you should mention that. I know a family of, and it is connected with some friends of mine who raise alpacas up here in this area of Chicago, which would be Lake County, maybe. And because my friend talks to me a lot about working with their relatives on the, cutting and trimming or whatever they do with them, to use the whatever you want to call it, the fur. Yeah, there's that out here, but that was a good look at things that I wasn't really too well aware of. I'm pretty aware of the history of this country, but you know, the professor has been on the money too with this week. Darn sure of that. But the thing I wanted to mention, you see what happened to Buffalo, huh?
You mean to the extent that Buffalo got whacked?
Yes.
Lake effect snow.
They've got somewhere around 8 feet of snow on certain parts. And it came down all at once. And I listened to a local yokel call up there and talked to some of the people living there. And some places you can't see your car. I mean, this is a snowstorm out of the some of the things you read in the old Western novels, you know. The Texas Panhandle was a place, I guess, took a lot of snow at times. But, man, they're in deep doo-doo up there. It's tough. And the funny thing is, that water, that wind went straight down Lake Erie. Because when that wind, because we had a west wind here, and my apartment was freezing from the west wind, hitting the windows here and just pouring through this wonderful construction of this place. And if it changes direction and turns south, that's when Cleveland gets hit. We got hit with 24 inches in 24 hours back in 1950. And, of course, me being 7 years old, that was really astounding, you know. Now, you talk about something that really widened your eyes with that kind of a snow when you're, if I'm 5'6" now, I probably was about 3'4" or something in those days. So a friend of mine said he fell into a snowdrift, and he said a big black hand came down and picked him up. It was a, you know, African-American guy who pulled him out of the snow, and he says, I'll be thankful to that guy all my life, because he, which was a good thing for that to happen to a young guy, you know. That kind of stuff can cure you of a lot of stupidity. When somebody, you know, some other man of another race saves your ass, you'll, you know.
When you're see things differently.
My buddy was a year, yeah. My buddy of mine's a year younger than I am, so he's an old man now, too. But, yeah, that was a big storm. But, yeah, my God, I mean, how did the winds hold so steady that one area of Buffalo is just really hurting? The other area has maybe got 2 feet or 3 feet, but this area has 8 feet. How the hell do you cope with that, Bob?
I don't know. I've never had to. I guess if there's anything good to be said, I guess that, you know, if you live up there, you're going to deal with it during any given winter. So, you know, maybe you hope that a civilized infrastructure has the requisite tools to deal with it. But then again, this is America in the second decade of the 21st century, and there's no guarantee of that anymore, because we have a significant plurality in this country, Bill, that does not believe in the idea of America anymore.
Yeah. And assisting one another in the different crises, put it that way. And you see, the funny thing is that Buffalo was supposed to play Detroit this Sunday, and Detroit was going to play in Buffalo. And they were talking about hiring people at $10 an hour to shovel off the seating area and whatever else they could do, you know? And that's like, are you kidding me? Now they moved the game to Detroit. But, I mean, how ridiculous is that when your whole city is buried that you're going to hire people to clear out an amusement park, to clear out a football field? Give me a break, will you? I love pro football. I've loved it since I was 11 years old. But come on, let's start thinking a little more sanely here. Because the interview that I heard today from a woman, two women were on the other line coming out of Buffalo, and the stories they were telling, one of them has a bad ankle or a bad foot and can't get around real well. And she says, you can't see the cars in the street anymore. I mean, that's an amazing snow for, you know, But as I say, with a little bad luck, it would have been Cleveland that got hit like that, because that's what happens to you. How did the wind hold on that spot, you know?
I guess this is somewhat anomalous insofar as it's, we actually have to start on the far west coast in order to begin. Actually, you have to start all the way across the Pacific to start answering this question. How often does a massive super typhoon go all the way to the Arctic? How often does a massive super typhoon form in the Pacific, slam into Japan, pinball off of Japan, bounce up onto Alaska, and knock all that Arctic air mass all the way across a continent? I mean, does that just happen all the time?
Well, whoever planned this environment way ahead of me, I couldn't think that way at all. I mean, because I do remember seeing some reports after Fukushima that the Case Western Reserve had a weather station, and they were showing some radiation in the rainwater that wasn't there. The little higher rate of radiation after that earthquake disaster. What was it, an earthquake or a typhoon? Or what?
Well, no, it was an earthquake that then caused a massive tsunami.
Yeah. Okay, that's still, and they're talking about that like this. Oh, there's nothing wrong with it. What bothers me is I didn't pay much attention to Chernobyl. I was involved with trying to really, I was at the height of, what year was that?
What was that, a couple of years ago?
Chernobyl?
Chernobyl. Oh, geez, you caught me out, Bill. I don't have that on an immediately accessible brain cell.
Yeah, I can't remember when it was. So what a mess. And it was funny. What I do remember is we kids building all these USS Nautilus, the first atomic submarine, and I guess we're just too damn unlucky that atomic energy, which has a lot of power, is just not the correct thing to use. Coal was not the correct thing to use, but it might have been the only thing to use for many years. But, you know, sometimes you got to quit, Bob, and you got to move to something else. From what you're telling me, they're running out of coal down there. They didn't want to admit it.
Well, the problem is the Earth isn't. We're running out in central Appalachia. But they're going great guns in southern Illinois. And they're mining for all they're worth in Wyoming in the Powder River Basin, where the seams are 100 feet thick. And they're trying to mine for all they're worth in Montana. And there are more proven coal reserves in Alaska than in all of the lower 48 combined. But see, here's the interesting thing: the United States doesn't need that coal. The United States we don't need it. It's not necessary to our survival. It's not necessary to our national security. So the only reason to develop all of this garbage is to externalize it onto the rest of the world, which is a nasty piece of business. Because the Germans are ramping up their coal consumption. The Dutch import more mountaintop removal coal from Appalachia than any other country on Earth. We ship vast boatloads of coal to China. We ship it to Russia. We ship it to India. And I don't want to be understood as being somehow xenophobic or biased, but the last thing that China or India with their rising middle class need is the toxicity of coal.
Yes. Well, I know what happened during the Olympics over there, where taxi drivers were driving with masks over their face. Of course, in the place of a taxi driver right here in Cleveland, they should wear a mask. But it's expensive. But it's pretty bad over there. I always say a Mao Zedong will drop from the planet that he's on or wherever he's at and come back and look around, he'd have a shit hemorrhage. He'd be happy to see the people making a living, but I don't know if he'd like to see his country destroyed by the fact. I mean, I don't think the Chinese Communist Party of today is the so-called Chinese Communist Party of the 1950s.
Oh, they're about as communist as the Republican Party are.
That's what I would say, too. You know, it's, you learn so much. You know, you study this beginnings and the things that led to the beginnings of World War One. Oh, my God. It's just one piece of craziness after another. You know, the Austro-Hungarians trying to hold on to this empirical BS. When Vienna, which is a beautiful city, they had a higher rate of suicides than anybody else around at that time. Well, I'll let you go, but yeah, you open the money tonight, and it's because as old as I am, I still like to learn things, and I had never realized that you know, they had found remains of people who were very similar to people who were living in Nebraska and Dakota. Well, they lived in Minnesota too, because the General Pope, the Union General, took a beating at Bull Run. He was shipped off to Minnesota to fight against the Sioux back in the 1860s. So this kind of crap's been going on for way too long, too. That's the other thing. And then the people that fascinated me were the Cliff Dwellers, who turned into the other guys that lived in high apartment type places. I don't know what the hell they were called.
You're talking about the Hopi and the Diné, the Navajo?
Yeah.
But the culture you're talking about is commonly referred to as the Anasazi.
Okay. Because there was a whole lot of difference between the people. The people out in Washington and Oregon were taking off in big boats and going out and killing whales, because it was a food product with them. They weren't selling it. You know, this wasn't Moby Dick, you know. This was survival, because that's what happens. And the buffalo was a wonderful thing that nature put here that you could really talk about. From what I hear, I've had buffalo burgers, which, you know. But it was a real... what destroyed it was the hides. Guys, the buffalo hunters killing them and skinning them, taking the hides and leaving the corpse to rot, you know. But I hear about hunters. A friend of mine was married to a guy who was a hunter, and they'd go after a moose, and they would basically do the same thing. Leave them, the meat of the moose to rot. And instead of making contact
with
the neighborhood...
Remember, white folks, tour groups, went across the plains in railroad cars and slaughtered buffalo by the hundreds.
Yep.
Just shooting them to kill them as they went driving by. Call it railroad hunting, if you will.
I don't know, you ever eat buffalo meat?
Yeah. Well, I've had the stuff that's farm raised, yeah, and it's tasty. You just have to be careful how you cook it, because it doesn't have nearly the fat content of beef. You can go from delicious to half sole your shoes in about 15 seconds.
Now, when it came to any kind of barbecuing or use of a grill, the words were low
and slow.
Yep.
It's amazing how many cooking problems can be solved by the words low and slow.
I'm actually thinking.
I don't know if I'm going to or not, but I'm thinking about at least starting the Thanksgiving turkey in the smoker, Bill.
Oh, yeah.
When I do a turkey in the smoker, what I do is I get the turkey. And here's something fun. Are you familiar with beer can chicken?
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah.
You know where you prop the bird on a about a half full can of beer, and you let the heat from the grill heat up the beer. The beer turns to steam, and it steams the chicken from the inside, while convection currents cook it from the outside, and you get this wonderful crispy skin and tender, moist insides. Well, you can actually, with a relatively small turkey, mind you, you can actually do a version of beer can chicken with a turkey. But what you want for that is one of those big old oil cans of Foster's.
Yep, yeah, those were good, yeah.
And so what you have to do is you open your oil can of Foster's, and you pour about half of it down the chef. And then you rub your bird and everything, put a little oil, salt, pepper, whatever seasonings you want, and you prop him up on that, and you put him in the smoker. Whoa. Yeah, that's special. But the other thing, if I do this, I'll probably do it this way. Get the bird, mummify the bird in bacon, and then let it low and slow smoke, since we're only doing it partially, for about maybe 8 hours, and then finish it in the oven.
Sounds good to me. Well, last year I went to the home of one of our people here who fed me a nice Thanksgiving dinner, the first one I've had in years, and enjoyed the hell out of it. I won't tell you who it is, but it's one of the guys.
I know who it was.
Regular.
I know who it was.
The guy actually talked about letting me into his house. What did you do, count the silverware? What the hell is it?
No, they had a wonderful time with you.
Well, that was so funny when I said count the silverware. You ever see that Marx Brothers movie where stuff comes falling out of Harpo's?
Oh, yeah, out of his pockets, yeah.
Everything is coming out. Everything in the house. Well, I'll let you go, but it was a good day. It was a really good what?
I was going to say, by the way, we have been updated by Ron and Raleigh and by Marty on the West Coast. Chernobyl was 1986.
Okay. Yeah, 86. I was buying a home and moving out of the inner city and out to Lake County, and that was, as usual.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
Chernobyl and the Challenger disaster happened in the same year.
Oh, man. Because Chernobyl was a disaster, and I don't know, Jim would have something to say, but I don't know. Sometimes I didn't trust the way the Russians built things was sometimes... What caused it? Was it something went wrong in the way it was built? Something didn't work?
I will have to defer to another member of the Horn Family Commune congregation for a full explanation of that.
Yeah, I'd like
because
to know
since
what
it because since it happened during the Soviet era, there was a great deal of lack of information or misinformation or disinformation surrounding the disaster.
A lot of hustling, you know.
Wasn't it rather a significant period of time before the Soviet government even acknowledged there'd been a problem?
Yeah. Well, they have one out in Perry, Ohio, and I remember when they were building it, a lot of the guys that were building it were new band fans, and they'd come in, and they were selling stainless steel belt buckles. Because you know what the pipe was in that?
Stainless?
Stainless steel. Yep. And that was, Well, it's the same thing when I watch the guys building buildings in this circle in the college area. These guys would come in and drink their lunch, and they'd go out and walk that ice steel. And I said, if I drank that much, I couldn't walk on a damn sidewalk. these guys were artists, man. I mean, they just unbelievably. I had an uncle who was a riveter during the 30s, and he traveled to follow his work during the Depression. He worked on the Huey Long in New Orleans and the Golden Gate on the West Coast. And, that's what you had to do. I've been doing, what do you got here? I've been doing some hard traveling. That's what they did. My aunt and him and their Scotty dog and a car with a small trailer, and that's how they survived. That was part of that. That was part of that Depression area. There wasn't any jobs around you. You had to go find them, you know. And they don't teach kids anything about the Depression here, and it bothers the hell out of me, because these kids don't know what potentially can happen to this great society, you know?
Yeah,
what
no
can happen. I won't be around, but I hope not, because I don't want to live forever, and I hope it never happens, but I'm kind of pessimistic about the financial situation in this country.
But you know what, Bill? I'm not. Yes, I understand what you mean when you say you're pessimistic about the financial situation. It's not the financial situation that scares me near as much as our situation relative to our desire to be a continuing species. In times of financial collapse, if we really, really care about our fellow human, we can find a way, even no matter how hard it is, to try to survive. But if we but if we make the planet unfit for human habitation, we all go.
Yeah, there's not enough money in the world to make any difference. That's exactly the But I just say I grew up kind of on the poor side of things and went through the middle class and was doing very well until my second marriage went and my eyes went bad, because then I could no longer really lead a band where I could arrive at a job 2 hours early and set up everything, and I had a camper that I could go to sleep in and then go back in and work and be, you know, refreshed and awake and ready to blow my head off and, well, that's a bad choice of words, but really play harp, you know, and it was give the best I had to offer, and that's why we were pretty, this band was pretty good in its day. It won several awards around here, and, but as I said, the highlight of my day so far is to know that there's a, New Orleans style restaurant on the west side of Cleveland. It's like, yes, sir. What do I find to drive me over there? I'll hand me the shovel. I'll dig somebody up.
Because, yeah, you know, you may not be able to spell muffaletta, but you can say it.
Yeah, you got it. Well, anyway, hang in there, and good job tonight getting us rolling.
All right. Thanks so much, Bill. You have a good evening. Good to hear from you.
Hang in there.
Bye-bye. Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, the legendary bluesman, calling from Cleveland. The Gizmo line is open now, 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. The other line is also open, 304-574-8178, if you wish to jump in. Like I said, come about 8 o'clock. We'll check in on President Obama's immigration speech. It'll be a great speech. It will probably not have anything earth-shattering in it, but you won't know that by checking in with the people who have the parakeets in their, spirochetes in their head, the right-wingers having their miserable hissy. And you know what? I hope Andrea Tarantula, or Tantaros, is right. I hope as a result of this speech, the right-wingers decide to impeach. I do. I'm kind of ready for it. Not that I want to see the president impeached. I want this right wing exposed for the bunch of miserable racist thugs that they are. I've got a letter here, and I'll rely on our buddy the Angry Indian to speak to its legitimacy or its genuineness. I've got an open letter here from Frank Ancona, the Klansman, the Imperial Grand Kleagel Wizard dipshit, whatever he is, who has been thoroughly outed by Anonymous. And depending on what happens with the president's remark. By the way, why are we calling it an immigration speech? It's not an immigration speech. It is a speech about how we treat young American citizens who were born here, have citizenship, and should not be treated any differently than any other born citizen, even white ones. Immigration speech, my left hind foot. Like I said, there's about 5 minutes remaining before the speech is supposed to begin. If you want to jump in to the conversation, I welcome you to it. And by the way, a reminder, as we move into the third hour of the program, a reminder that we have this evening, the 20th of November, we have Robert's Up Over Down Under Challenge, which happens the 20th of every month. And he has put $150 on the table and wants to see it, asks very politely to see it matched. Thus far, during the course of the program, no takers. Sorry, Robert. If you want to participate, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. Or you can just log into your own PayPal account and use bobkincaid@gmail.com. Not Bob at or Bob Kincaid at anything but gmail.com. Just bobkincaid@gmail.com. And we will take care of tomorrow night's fundraising and start on Monday, which will be good because, well, you know, it's going to be a short week because of Thanksgiving. So, you know, when people put challenges out there, it's awfully good when people can double their money by participating in it. So thank you, Robert, and thank you to everyone who chooses to participate. By the way, Texas Betsy says, isn't it about kids brought here as young children? Maybe, but in light of the fact that the right wing's having a hissy about Fourth Amendment citizenship, or 14th Amendment citizenship, it's also about children who are born here but whose parents were not. And the right wing reserves an especial hatred for those children, calling them anchor babies, as noted in the earlier portion of the program. Quick update for you, having absolutely nothing to do with immigration or migration or American citizenship. I ran over and checked out, because I thought we might want to talk about this evening, I ran over and checked out WVGazette.com. And there it is. It was a big day in Beckley, West Virginia today. Don Blankenship appeared in federal court in Beckley today, and proving that there is no deity who takes care of universal justice hovering up in the sky, pled not guilty to charges that he created the circumstances that led to the wholesale incineration of 29 human beings, and a lightning bolt did not come down and fry him dead on the spot for lying. The trial date is set for January 26th. Blankenship was released on $5 million bond, which he could skip on and never miss a penny of. Not even $29 million. $29 million would have been appropriate, I think, maybe $1 million for each incinerated human being. And walking into the courtroom, no one gunned him down on the steps like they did Sid Hatfield nearly 100 years ago down in McDowell County, West Virginia. Nope. He's charged with 3 felonies and 1 misdemeanor. The combined maximum sentence would be 31 years in prison if he is convicted and sentenced to that. I'll eat my hat. Unlike poor people who are hailed into federal court, he was allowed to walk into court wearing a pinstripe gangster suit and a red tie. Yeah. He is being represented by a pettifogger by the name of Eric Dolinsky. Eric Dolinsky was upset because he said that Don Blankenship is now a resident of Nevada and doesn't want to live in West Virginia, Stan. The Gazette article by Ken Ward Jr., and what do we have to do to get this guy a Pulitzer? Ken Ward Jr. writes, Eric Dolinsky, one of Blankenship's lawyers, said Blankenship would agree to the $5 million bail. Well, isn't that sweet? He'll agree to it. Walk into a courtroom sometime on a bail hearing, an arraignment, and see what see how many shades of purple the judge's face turns when some poor schmuck charged with something says he'll agree to the bail. By God, and this is why I'm not a judge, if I'd heard he'll agree to the bail, I'd have said, oh, really, will he agree? That's just charming. Will he agree to $29 million? But no. There was none of that. There were no shenanigans. The court is locked down tight. You can't get access to the pleading documents. All you can see, none of the evidence that's been submitted, nothing. Nope, no can do. Because the Judge Irene Berger, the federal judge overseeing this trial, has decided that the First Amendment really is nothing more than a life support system for the religion industry, and therefore has decided that freedom of the press and even freedom of speech doesn't matter. She has forbidden the victims' families from even speaking about what happened to their loved ones under pain of penalty of contempt of court. The magistrate, R. Clark Vandervoort, did decide to say that Blankenship would have to remain in southern West Virginia or Pike County, Kentucky. He is allowed, however, to travel to Washington, D.C. to confer with his pettifoggers, I mean lawyers, but any other travel has to be approved in advance. If you have any knowledge of the legal system, you know what extraordinary lengths are being taken to accommodate a man who incinerated 29 human beings with his greed. So I just thought you might like a Blankenship update. Okay, it is 8:03 p.m., and thank you very kindly to Marty, and thank you to Thomas. That takes us down to $115 to go on the challenge. Horst has a message. He's taken us down to $105. He says, I'm only supposed to contribute once a month, but if it helps motivate others to join in and answer Robert's challenge, I'll make an exception. I understand it's a hard time of year to contribute, and it's a brutal month for me personally, but $1 or $5 won't kill anybody. Thank you, Horst. Thank you very kindly. So we've got $105 to go to match Robert's Up Over Down Under challenge for the 20th of the month. Thank you all very, very much. All right. I'm going to see if this link works. Thank you. Thank you very much, Sparky, for sending it along.
Last year, 68 Democrats, Republicans, and Independents came together to pass a bipartisan bill in the Senate. It wasn't perfect. It was a compromise. But it reflected common sense. It would have doubled the number of Border Patrol agents while giving undocumented immigrants a pathway to citizenship if they paid a fine, started paying their taxes, and went to the back of the line. An independent expert said that it would help grow our economy and shrink our deficits. Had the House of Representatives allowed that kind of bill, a simple yes or no vote, it would have passed with support from both parties, and today it would be the law. But for a year and a half now, Republican leaders in the House have refused to allow that simple vote. Now, I continue to believe that the best way to solve this problem is by working together to pass that kind of common sense law. But until that happens, there are actions I have the legal authority to take as president, the same kinds of actions taken by Democratic and Republican presidents before me, that will help make our immigration system more fair and more just. Tonight, I'm announcing those actions. First, we'll build on our progress at the border with additional resources for our law enforcement personnel so that they can stem the flow of illegal crossings and speed the return of those who do cross over. Second, I'll make it easier and faster for high-skilled immigrants, graduates, and entrepreneurs to stay and contribute to our economy, as so many business leaders have proposed. Third, we'll take steps to deal responsibly with the millions of undocumented immigrants who already live in our country. I want to say more about this third issue because it generates the most passion and controversy. Even as we are a nation of immigrants, we're also a nation of laws. Undocumented workers broke our immigration laws, and I believe that they must be held accountable, especially those who may be dangerous. That's why over the past 6 years, deportations of criminals are up 80%. And that's why we're going to keep focusing enforcement resources on actual threats to our security. Felons, not families. Criminals, not children. Gang members, not a mom who's working hard to provide for her kids. We'll prioritize, just like law enforcement does every day. But even as we focus on deporting criminals, the fact is millions of immigrants in every state, of every race and nationality, still live here illegally. And let's be honest, tracking down, rounding up, and deporting millions of people isn't realistic. Anyone who suggests otherwise isn't being straight with you. It's also not who we are as Americans. After all, most of these immigrants have been here a long time. They work hard, often in tough, low-paying jobs. They support their families. They worship at our churches. Many of their kids are American-born or spent most of their lives here. And their hopes, dreams, and patriotism are just like ours. As my predecessor, President Bush, once put it, they are a part of American life. Now, here's the thing. We expect people who live in this country to play by the rules. We expect that those who cut the line will not be unfairly rewarded. So we're going to offer the following deal. If you've been in America for more than 5 years, if you have children who are American citizens or legal residents, if you register, pass a criminal background check, and you're willing to pay your fair share of taxes, you'll be able to apply to stay in this country temporarily without fear of deportation. You can come out of the shadows and get right with the law. That's what this deal is. Now, let's be clear about what it isn't. This deal does not apply to anyone who has come to this country recently. It does not apply to anyone who might come to America illegally in the future. It does not grant citizenship or the right to stay here permanently, or offer the same benefits that citizens receive. Only Congress can do that. All we're saying is we're not going to deport you. I know some of the critics of this action call it amnesty. Well, it's not. Amnesty is the immigration system we have today. Millions of people who live here without paying their taxes or playing by the rules, while politicians use the issue to scare people and whip up votes at election time. That's the real amnesty, leaving this broken system the way it is. Mass amnesty would be unfair. Mass deportation would be both impossible and contrary to our character. What I'm describing is accountability. You can come out of the shadows and get right with the law. If you're a criminal, you'll be deported. If you plan to enter the U.S. illegally, your chances of getting caught and sent back just went up. The actions I'm taking are not only lawful, they're the kinds of actions taken by every single Republican president and every single Democratic president for the past half century. And to those members of Congress who question my authority to make our immigration system work better, or question the wisdom of me acting where Congress has failed, I have one answer. Pass a bill. I want to work with both parties to pass a more permanent legislative solution. And the day I sign that bill into law, the actions I take will no longer be necessary. Meanwhile, don't let a disagreement over a single issue be a deal breaker on every issue. That's not how our democracy works. And Congress certainly shouldn't shut down our government again just because we disagree on this. Americans are tired of gridlock. What our country needs from us right now is a common purpose, a higher purpose. Most Americans support the types of reforms I've talked about tonight, but I understand the disagreements held by many of you at home. Millions of us, myself included, go back generations in this country with ancestors who put in the painstaking work to become citizens. So we don't like the notion that anyone might get a free pass to American citizenship. I know some worry immigration will change the very fabric of who we are, or take our jobs, or stick it to middle-class families at a time when they already feel like they've gotten the raw deal for over a decade. I hear those concerns. But that's not what these steps would do. Our history and the facts show that immigrants are a net plus for our economy and our society. And I believe it's important that all of us have this debate without impugning each other's character. Because for all the back and forth of Washington, we have to remember that this debate is about something bigger. It's about who we are as a country and who we want to be for future generations. Are we a nation that tolerates the hypocrisy of a system where workers who pick our fruit and make our beds never have a chance to get right with the law? Or are we a nation that gives them a chance to make amends, take responsibility, and give their kids a better future? Are we a nation that accepts the cruelty of ripping children from their parents' arms? Or are we a nation that values families and works together to keep them together? Are we a nation that educates the world's best and brightest in our universities only to send them home to create businesses in countries that compete against us? Or are we a nation that encourages them to stay and create jobs here, create businesses here, create industries right here in America? That's what this debate is all about. We need more than politics as usual when it comes to immigration. We need reasoned, thoughtful, compassionate debate that focuses on our hopes, not our fears. I know the politics of this issue are tough, but let me tell you why I have come to feel so strongly about it. Over the past years, I've seen the determination of immigrant fathers who worked two or three jobs without taking a dime from the government and at risk any moment of losing it all just to build a better life for their kids. I've seen the heartbreak and anxiety of children whose mothers might be taken away from them just because they didn't have the right papers. I've seen the courage of students who, except for the circumstances of their birth, are as American as Malia or Sasha. Students who bravely come out as undocumented in hopes they could make a difference in the country they love. These people, our neighbors, our classmates, our friends, they did not come here in search of a free ride or an easy life. They came to work and study and serve in our military and, above all, contribute to America's success. Now, tomorrow I'll travel to Las Vegas and meet with some of these students, including a young woman named Astrid Silva. Astrid was brought to America when she was 4 years old. Her only possessions were a cross, her doll, and the frilly dress she had on. When she started school, she didn't speak any English. She caught up to other kids by reading newspapers and watching PBS. And she became a good student. Her father worked in landscaping. Her mom cleaned other people's homes. They wouldn't let Astrid apply to a technology magnet school, not because they didn't love her, but because they were afraid the paperwork would out her as an undocumented immigrant. So she applied behind their back and got in. Still, she mostly lived in the shadows. Until her grandmother, who visited every year from Mexico, passed away. And she couldn't travel to the funeral without risk of being found out and deported. It was around that time she decided to begin advocating for herself and others like her. And today, Astrid Silva is a college student working on her third degree. Are we a nation that kicks out a striving, hopeful immigrant like Astrid? Or are we a nation that finds a way to welcome her in? Scripture tells us that we shall not oppress a stranger, for we know the heart of a stranger. We were strangers once too. My fellow Americans, we are and always will be a nation of immigrants. We were strangers once too. And whether our forebears were strangers who crossed the Atlantic or the Pacific or the Rio Grande, we are here only because this country welcomed them in and taught them that to be an American is about something more than what we look like or what our last names are or how we worship. What makes us Americans is our shared commitment to an ideal that all of us are created equal and all of us have the chance to make of our lives what we will. That's the country our parents and grandparents and generations before them built for us. That's the tradition we must uphold. That's the legacy we must leave for those who are yet to come. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless this country we love.
Oh my God, their heads are exploding all over America, aren't they? I mean, how dare him? How dare him talk about how he's got ancestors that go back generations in America? Only the white part. Yeah, I got a note from Asa in Vancouver a little bit ago. You know, I wish this man would stop saying, I want to work with both parties. Asa says, F both parties. Well, both parties aren't part of the problem. There's only one party that's part of the problem here. And as much hell and as much grief as we give them, the Democrats are not that party. It was a that was a real gym crack of a speech. That was a sure enough dandy. I mean, that was the good stuff. In many ways, that may be as good as he's ever been, speechifying. And it is going to drive the right wing absolutely crazier than a sprayed roach. Andrea Tantaros and Laura Ingraham may, even at this time, moment, be tearing at their hair and rending their garments and sitting in sackcloth and ashes, since we're going to haul out a bunch of Old Testament imagery. And you know, I double-checked, by the way, with Texas Betsy in the chat room when he was talking about it. You do know that we were all strangers once. That's straight out of the Old Testament. For we were all strangers in the land of Egypt. With regard to the work with both parties, Texas Betsy says, subtext, look, I'm a Republican too. Oh, golly, Ned. This is not rocket science. And by the way, notice how much time he spent talking about the people that we're going to drop a rock on. If you got here less than 5 years ago, you're effed. Even if your baby was born here. Note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Hey, Bob, I guess he doesn't remember 300-plus years of slavery and 100-plus years of Jim Crow. I can barely listen to his speeches because of the obvious omissions. Robert asking, I wonder if Fox showed the speech. It's my understanding they didn't, I think. Ron, during the speech, also said, wait a damn minute. It's the immigrants that are the problem, not the swine that hire them. A modest proposal, let's fine and jail the people that hire them. Let's look at the wages in industries that have displaced unionized American workers with non-unionized undocumented workers. Yeah, let's look at that. Let's look at that guy who, that construction contractor who hires undocumented immigrants at a third of the minimum wage and pays no workers' compensation and no unemployment compensation and no insurance so that he can have a new Porsche next year. Shall we? Diane, marvelously coherent in Kansasstan, says, President Obama proposes this after the Hispanic voters sat out the recent election. Similarly, making student loans an issue might have galvanized the young to vote. What am I missing? Precisely nothing, Diane. This is a Democratic Party that is in a constant response mode and never attacks. This is a Democratic Party that is afraid of its own shadow. By the way, thank you very kindly to BLKFLABRO, Black Flabro, Black Florida Bro, for kicking in on the Up Over Down Under challenge via Robert in Australia. Now it says to meet the Aussie challenge from Florida, Stan. Thank you very kindly. Thank you indeed. And thank you to Thomas Jug a Punch for kicking in as well. Thank you, Horst. Thank you, Marty. We are down at... Got to do some gazintas in my head here. Yeah, we're down to $90. $90 to go. In meeting Robert's Up Over Down Under challenge, Robert sends a note along. Pass my thanks to everyone who has chipped in and those who want to but cannot. Signed, Robert from Oz, who's doing some gardening while listening in 35 degree centigrade heat. Sounds nice about now. What is it in the studio here? Hey, well, yeah, we got a little bit of a break today. It's all of 70 in the studio right now. Last night it was not even terrifyingly cold. Apparently that happens again soon, however. We'll get a little bit more nasty before... But next week's supposed to mild up some. Irish Dave noting, also too, NBC, ABC, CBS refused to carry the speech. Wow. Wow. Just amazing. So your responses to the address are much appreciated, and frankly, you've got an open line for it. You've got two, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN, or 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. Skype to Skype, of course, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Oh, thank you, Isaac. Isaac says Fox News did run it. Well, I was kind of surprised when they said they wouldn't. Or I was kind of surprised at the idea that they wouldn't, because why would they ever miss an opportunity to collectively lose the thin gray settlings that surround their great big lizard brains in an absolute orgy of Obama hate. Yeah, true. Absolutely true. Sparky pointing out about the contractors and they cheat on Davis-Bacon Act jobs too, Bob. No doubt. Oh, let's see. Here, I want to see if I can actually do... Hold on. I don't know if you can. I don't know if we can bring him in over. I don't see a live feed of the Fox Hysteria, but you know, there's. There's plenty of plenty of good reaction here. Let's check in with Representin' McCall. This is a thing of beauty. Wait until just okay. Dig the phrase used, and this is a very erudite and very historically plugged in group of little family commune congregation. Wait until you hear the phrase Representin' McCall uses to describe how he wants to oppose that what that one is doing in regard to people who have already been here for 5 years. You know, really, we still need that Secretary of Jesus, Barack. Did you think that by quoting George W. Bush, you were somehow going to make him like you? Really? There's a scene from Blazing Saddles. Did you think they were going to say, "Come on in, marry our daughter"? But wait for the magic phrase from Representin' McCall.
Just today, calling on the president to work within the constitutional system. They say they're afraid to the plan to make five...
Wait, who wrote that tripe? This is from earlier today. Calling on the president to work within the constitutional system, thereby, by the verbiage, letting all the nonagenarians who watch Fox News know that whatever the president did was going to be unconstitutional.
Million immigrants legal would open the floodgates to more. Democrats are doing their best to sell it.
It's bold, it's courageous, it's as good as it can be.
This, of course, Nancy Pelosi.
Under the law. That doesn't mean we wouldn't like to have a bill.
He will have issued a rebuke to his own stated view of democracy.
That, of course, is chinless Mitch McConnell. How's your father-in-law, Mitch? How's that boatload of cocaine going? And by the way, we should probably talk about this since Chinless Mitch just showed up on the telescreen. How about this part? Na, 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 na. Oh, there it is. Chinless Mitch McConnell. He takes a lot of money from a lot of people. He got a lot of money from his father-in-law, you know, the guy with the boatload of cocaine. But he especially has taken money in the past from somebody really, really, really noteworthy. Yep. Chinless Mitch McConnell, future majority leader of the Senate of the United States, has taken money directly from Don Blankenship. Oh, granted, it was a long time ago. But you know what? It's awfully hard to get blood off of money. In 1996 and 2002, in each of those cycles, he accepted $1,000 from Dandy Don Blankenship. You know, Lord Coldemort. So continue, you raving, miserable hypocrite, you.
Instances of President Obama saying that he does not have the power to do the kinds of things he now plans to do are almost too numerous to list.
One of the co-signers of that letter to the White House, Congressman Michael McCall, Republican from Texas and chair of the House Homeland Security Committee, joins us now. Congressman, I want to begin with part of the text of the letter that you sent to the president. You wrote, "We implore you to work with Congress to enact legislation to address our broken immigration system. We strongly urge you to respect the Constitution and abandon any unconstitutional unilateral executive actions on..."
There it is again. Abandon unconstitutional unilateral actions. You know what? If it's unconstitutional, dipstick. Impeach him. Do it. Do it. I triple dog dare you.
Immigration. Let's secure the border and for.
Oh, and by the way, now they want to work with him? Because, see, as he pointed out in his speech, there's been a bill on the table, and the Republicans wouldn't let it move. But now they want to work. God, their hypocrisy and their mendacity is utterly transparent.
Force our immigration laws in the interior of the United States and build a broad consensus for immigration reform. Otherwise, we will be forced to use the tools afforded to Congress by the...
Oh, here it comes. I think this qualifies as a threat. I don't want to interfere.
Actions on immigration. Let's secure the border, enforce our immigration laws in the interior of the United States, and build a broad consensus for immigration reform. Otherwise, we will be forced to use the tools afforded to Congress by the Constitution to stop your administration from successfully carrying out your plan. The last part, I guess, is the big question. What tools does Congress have to stop the president if he wants to do this?
They can hold their breath until they turn blue. No, red. No, blue.
Well, I think we stop him by any means necessary.
Oh, score! Because you know where that comes from, right? We stop him by any means necessary. I can just see Representative Michael McCaul walking around with his high-fronted ball cap with that big X on the front. By any means necessary. By any means necessary. I have a sneaking suspicion that somewhere out there, my buddy the Angry Indian is kicking furniture right now. Yep. Every January, the Republicans remind us that the only thing they know about Martin Luther King is that he once said, a man should be judged by the content of his character, not the color of his skin. That's all they know. That's all they, yeah. On the other hand, by any means necessary, they're lifting from Malcolm X. Malcolm X, what most people don't realize, Malcolm X was quoting Jean-Paul Sartre. Jean-Paul Sartre, in the play Dirty Hands, said, "I was not the one to invent lies. They were created in a society divided by class, and each of us inherited lies when we were born. It is not by refusing to lie that we will abolish lies. It is by eradicating class by any means necessary." Having read that, Malcolm X said, in 1964, "We declare our right on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rights of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary." And so here is a pale, pasty, doughy, white privileged up to his hair, wingnut, repiglickin', birther, deather, tenther, bagger, booger eater. And understand, by any means necessary includes the threat of violence, okay? In the French and in the English, there is a violence, a potential violence component to it. Thus, let's hear him again.
Last part, I guess, is the big question. What tools does Congress have to stop the president if he wants to do this?
Well, I think we stop him by any means necessary.
That's right. You just heard it. You just heard it right. You just heard a member of the Congress of the United States, a sworn constitutional oath bearing member of the House of Representatives of the United States of America, threaten violence against the president, the sitting president of the United States of America. Wow. That's where they are now. That is where they are now.
Including the power of the purse. And I think there was some discussion about these fees that fund the processing of these illegals. And I think that's something we're...
Still referring to human beings as illegals. See, that's the fig leaf he's going to hide behind. Oh, I'm talking about money, not violence. Nonetheless, the phrase has its own independent meaning, and this guy is using it. It's going to be an interesting couple of years. And while I don't walk around shaking in fear at much of anything, I can say with some certainty that it's also, yeah, a potentially frightening couple of years. Indeed, indeed. And then, of course, there's our old friend, Alex Jones. And I share this with you because of what Representative McCall from Texas just said. Do not take any of this lightly. These people are deadly in earnest. Frighteningly so. Because remember, there are millions of people, I suppose, who listen to someone like Alex Jones. And Alex Jones has now said, no, not kidding. Alex Jones has now declared that, this is kind of tough to even say out loud, that he predicts an assassination attempt on President Obama that will lead to everybody getting their guns tucked away. Great God in heaven. Phyllis Schlafly's calling an executive order about immigration, Fort Sumter. Alex Jones is speculating on immigration, and a member of the House of Representatives is talking about by any means necessary. They have completely taken leave of whatever might have once upon a time passed for their senses. Merciful heaven. Note coming in from Bill in Montana. Yeah, if you're wondering what's going on, the computer has slowed to a crawl. Bill says, am I the only one who caught the oblique reference to H-1B visa holders? You know, the ones who come to this country to work in IT or engineering, working for less than the going salary for their field of study, thereby kneecapping citizen graduates who are looking for a job in order to repay outlandish student loans. In the meantime, the corporations pocket the profits. He's a speechifier, all right. And then I got one of those ominous Bob, Bob, Bob emails from Ron and Raleigh. You know, those never portend good. Bob, 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 you took the honorable gentleman from Texas out of context. He certainly didn't mean he would bust a cap in the Negro in chief. Ron, you optimist, you. And meanwhile, I want to share something with you, and I think this is contextually an appropriate time. This is something that was provided to me by our buddy the Angry Indian. It is a memo of its sort from the Invisible Empire. I would call it the Invisible Moronosphere of the Ku Klux Klan, under the signature of Frank Ancona, who has been thoroughly, completely, totally, and utterly outed as a Klansman. This is the guy who was saying that they will that the Klan is prepared to use lethal force against peaceful, legal protesters in Ferguson. He writes, "Greetings, Anonymous and its supporters." Well, you go to hell, Frank. The KKK has been bringing a message of... get the hockey puck back out. This will take a twice around with the duct tape. The KKK has been bringing a message of hope and deliverance to a white Christian America now for a number of years. We preach a message of love, not hate. By the way, Christians, your guy. Okay, y'all deal with him. Somebody out there declare he's not a Christian. I don't care if it's Pope Francis or James Dobson, or Chappie Klingenschmidt. I don't care. Somebody declare that this guy's going to hell, okay? I can't fix your problems. Only you can. However, there's only so much abuse we will sit and take from these would-be revolutionary left-wingers. If you poke the hive enough, the wasps will sting. That's what this is. Payback for all of the disinformation and attacks from the group known as Anonymous. I regard the Klan, the Anglo-Saxon... Well, yeah, we got to use the voice for this. I regard the Klan, the Anglo-Saxon clubs, and white American societies, as far as the Negro is concerned, as better friends of the race than all other groups of hypocritical whites put together. Why the group of wannabe hackers are targeting us is not clear. However, we do not have time to ask these questions when we are constantly under attack. Frank, it's not clear? Well, dumbass, you're the one who was passing out leaflets saying you were going to use lethal force on peaceful protesters. Yeah, that was you. That's why. Your attempts, as you will call it, doxing on official members of the Klan mean nothing. We're not trying to hide, and you're posting information that is public on the web. We don't care. Then why are you writing the memo, Frank? But you're hiding behind pathetic masks, trying your best to disable the Klan, which will never happen. Now let us tell you, we've paid people inside your little pathetic group, Anonymous, for your information, and from what has been given to us already, the main leaders of this op KKK have already been identified. Gee, You know what? I'm thinking maybe Anonymous is a little sharper than that. In other words, they've got an IQ higher than that of the entire Klan put together. I remember a story a while back when somebody, what was it? It was the great goating controversy when when a bunch of right wingers tried to out a person who was, you know, playing with these freaks, and it was complete. They made a complete gang of monkeys out of them. A few names have been obtained by us already, including that of a supposedly high-ranking anonymous member. Emphasis on the word supposedly. Commander X, the Grand Wizard of Anonymous. Really? Really? You fell for that, did you, Frank? You fell for somebody who calls himself the Grand Wizard of Anonymous? Come here, son. I got a bridge I want to show you. Let's see. Here we go. Remember, this is journalism. I do not like this word. But this is the way the Klan talks. This is just the tip of the iceberg. You pathetic nigger lovers. Remember, up there, the Klan's the best friend a black man ever had. Are going down. We're not hiding. And then they start typing in all caps, probably with one hand. We're not ashamed of who we are and what we represent. The Invisible Empire cannot and will not be overthrown. We held a clan-wide meeting today. Really? Both of you? With the Imperial Wizard, who has decided if you want war, we will give you war, not online, but on the streets. We will hunt you down and tear those masks from your face. We'll be strung up next to the chimps on display for the whole wide world to see. The clan is to be feared, not threatened. Turn away or face the consequences. We would like to wish Officer Darren Wilson and his family all the best in the future. To Anonymous and the people of Ferguson, we will see you on the streets. Signed and dated, the Grand Wizard, Frank Ancona, 11/19/2014. Today, tomorrow, and forever! Again, I gotta tell you, I don't know if that's real or not. Sounds it. I mean, it sounds dumb enough to be a Klansman. Sounds violent enough to be a Klansman. Sounds stupid enough to be a Klansman. Sounds racist enough to be a Klansman. And at that point in time, we move over into the territory if it quacks and walks and swims and paddles and honks like a duck. Well, geese honk, ducks quack. It's a duck! Yeah, I got a. So they have been needled, they claim, into violence when the Klan itself, this Frank Ancona creep, admits that, well, I mean, he was the one that was passing out the flyers. They're the ones that played the violence card right off the bat. I guess that qualifies as an executive order. Frank, with a note here, FYI, Alex Jones. I used to enjoy the overnight radio show Coast to Coast AM when Art Bell was there a decade or so back. I haven't been able to stand it since George Norrie took over, as he has Alex Jones on almost every night in the first half hour to give his wisdom commentary on the latest problems. Ew! Just ew! Hey, let's check in and see what Devin's thinking right now. Hey, Devin.
Look away, Dixieland.
Hey, you know that executive order? It's going to be just like Fort Sumter because it's subtle. Since when is cannon fire subtle, Devin? I mean, please.
Yeah. Long-range artillery is seldom subtle. But neither is treason.
God, these idiots.
Yeah, it's...
You understand why sometimes I want to bathe with bleach by the end of a program?
Yeah, I understand. Or MCHM or something like that.
Yeah, no, that I snort. Hey, stand by here. I finally got the Alex Jones clip. Are you ready for this? You got your hockey puck?
Roll it.
Here we go. Come on, Alex. Aw, now, damn it. This poor tired computer. Ah, okay, it's going. Cross your fingers.
God forbid, the last thing we would ever want would be for Obama to get assassinated, because then he could be turned into a martyr, and then they could lionize all the horrible things they've done in his name, and then say that you want to kill somebody if you're against Obamacare or against turning your guns in. In fact, I've been saying this for 6 years. The real false flag could be an assassination of Obama, or it could be an attempted assassination. But don't think that even though he's their Harvard minion and their golden, you know, idol, don't think that the globalists wouldn't be above assassinating him to create a martyred deity out of him.
Holy shit. And, you know,
they ain't enough liquor in the fruit jar, Devin.
No, they're hidden. It doesn't matter where you go in West Virginia. I mean, you know, anywhere in public, this is what you hear.
And
waiting in a doctor's office or anything else. It's just, you know.
Yeah. Oh, by the way,
how they would do it, you know.
By the way, interesting observation coming from Robert in Australia, and a reminder, we've got $90 to go to meet Robert's Up Over Down Under 20th of the Month challenge. Subject line, Anonymous has no leaders. Bob, as I understand it, Anonymous has no leaders. They're an anarchy group, aren't they?
Ding, 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 ding.
So, yeah, I'm suspecting whoever it is that they think, you know, was outed to them. Oh, God. Idiots.
Well, I'm glad that he's doing something on immigration. It's probably not going to help my friend, but it's kind of interesting. I have a friend who's from the Ukraine, and he came here as a student. Well, first he came in the foreign exchange program, and then he came back to the same, to the same family outside of that program, and you know, went to WVU, got a degree in astrophysics, went to New Mexico, and of course, got screwed around with the school because they're xenophobic, but is trying to wrap up a master's in geology now. Married an American, but he can't stay because there was some little fine print in the foreign exchange program that he had to stay in Ukraine for a year before returning to the U.S., but nobody told him about that.
What?
So now he has to leave the country. Either he gets to go back there and he had to finish up the year. Of course, going back there means instant conscription and being slaughtered.
Yeah. Whatever happened to our exceptions for that kind of thing? Are they gone now?
Well, one has to get an exemption from the Secretary of State, and basically applying for that, generally they will, if you appeal, you know, if you appeal it, they'll rule that you have to stay away longer or forever. So
that doesn't sound like much of an appeals process if it's a foregone conclusion. That's not an appeals process at all.
Well, no. I mean, you know, it's administrative discretion. And generally, if you make an action like that, you face punitive actions, you know, for wasting their time.
That's some catch, that catch 22.
So I guess now his wife, who is an American, born here, you know, now they have to move to some other country so that he can continue to stay alive somewhere other than Ukraine, which is now, you know, the Cold War gone hot to the possible spark of World War III.
Yeah, Texas Betsy just pointed out an exception won't be granted without us taking sides in the war or admitting that it is a war, none of which we have yet done.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just a, you know, a really screwed up thing. And, you know, it's the kind of person that we should be begging to stay. I mean, you know, you have somebody with, you know, a lot of higher education, and that's the kind of people that we need.
And that's the kind of people they put up against the wall in the Ukraine.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not being flippant.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're not, either you've got to be, you know, pro-Russian and not very intelligent, or you've got to be a Nazi and not very intelligent, so.
Well, that not very intelligent seems to be the key to the long-term benefits program.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Damn. Good to hear from you, Devin, but I got to get out of here because we're right up at the top of it, and time to roll on. Don't be a stranger, and maybe jump in a little earlier next time.
Yeah.
All right. See you, Devin. Thank you for your input. Our buddy Devin, not too well, in a different corner of West by Cole, Virginia. It's time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for a bunch of great thoughts, good conversation, and thank you for your help in meeting Robert's Up Over Down Under Challenge. We have $90 to go if anybody wants to help out, and thanks to those who already have. Thank you to Horst and Thomas, and thank you to Black Flaw Bro, and thank you to Marty very, very much, and thank you as well. Paul. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the Horn chat room, moderators. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you to John Fox and to Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.